and I catch four of the starlings' nests, and it goes up inside the roof, you see. Got starlings? Ah, aren't you lucky? I catch four of the sparrows' nests. I go the swallows' nests are made out of mud. Yeah. They catch part of the rats' nests that are built in there. They bloody are. There are roof rats in every building. It's got a cavity.
What does the monsoon sprinkler run on?
Water.
No, but I mean what power?
Water.
Oh,
It's hydraulically turned. You know that thing goes ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch and covers an enormous area like that. You only need it to run for half an hour. Yeah, off a tank. Because you're going to empty that tank. You're never going to need that water if you're dead, eh? So you just turn the tank on and let it rip. And you only need it to rip for, you know, if it's even gone, made two passes round here, you're really out of trouble. Eh? Well, you'd need about a 1,000-gallon tank to really be effective. But, you know, it's sensible to have a little earth tank of maybe 4,000 or 5,000 gallons uphill 50 feet, you know. That's why I try and get everybody off these bloody ridges and get them downhill 50 feet, you know, because we can always give them an earth tank up there which we can pump up with a windmill, or often is full if you don't use it for any other purpose, that one day you just turn a tap on near the house and the monsoon starts.
What's the minimum area you should have cleared around the house and bushwalk?
Well, there's no real statement about that. To the north you want a space of 20 to 30 feet, and to the south it doesn't matter because it's going away from you. And if you've got it behind you to the south, if it looks bad, before the fire gets to you, go around to the south of the house and light it. And let it blow, go away. Yeah. You see? And then you've got a burnt area to retreat southwards into. Got it? And you always come around the south of your house, because there's no radiation on the south of your house. And you just sit around there while the front goes past. And then you walk around to the north of your house, picking up these basins you've had out, and throwing it on the bits of burning wood. Yeah. See? And you're out of business. You survived, and everything round in the fire shadow survives. We were designed to throw up fire shadows.
It's basically on the principle of the monsoon, you know, like a cyclone.
A cyclone spray. Mm. Yes, you know, those big sprinklers. It's a big sprinkler. They're half acre, quarter acre sprinklers. You know. Well, and you've got to do this because there's never, everybody's never at home, you know, and sometimes there are even just kids at home. And you want to tell them where the tap is to turn on if there's a fire coming. And in the 67 fire, it was a Tuesday, and every bloody man in my street except three of us were away. And there were over 40 women and about 60 children and we three blokes. And we had to do things like starting up the council grader and go and grading far away from people's houses. And we're not grader drives. We wrecked the bloody thing. We ran it through a house. And but we saved about three people like that. And we had to lay and, you know, run around and do things. And a lot of the women were extremely useful, but they had two or three kids to look after, you know. And they couldn't go around rushing around too much. And we lost a lot of people. And women jumped into tanks and things, you know. That's terrible, really. Hopped into their tank. Well, that's a type one error. So you've either thought it out with your... Look, I tell you what. You'll survive every fire you've thought about and none that you say won't happen. Survivorship is a question of having a plan. And no matter how simple that plan is, and the simplest plan is simply this. You take a wet blanket and some water and the people you value, and you go and sit around on the south side of the house. The fire front comes, the house will start to burn slightly before it gets there. It'll pass the house before the house starts to burn. You're sitting in a fire shadow, you're okay. And when the heat of the house burning gets too much for you, get up and walk around to the north side of the house and you're alive. That's the simplest plan, and it works. Just don't let the radiation hit you, and keep a damp down blanket over all of you. And you're right. You've got sore eyes, but you're right. And keep the hand over the baby's mouth, and the oxygen goes. And you know, And they wake up again later, pinch them, they're still alive, it's fine. A catastrophic fire always comes from the inland wind, yes. So work it out. Your worst fire where wind is a nor'west wind. Inland wind, yeah. Not really, that's not your worst fire wind because that's a humid wind. Those inland winds just have no humidity. Sorry, your easterly wouldn't have any humidity. Yeah, right. Yeah, okay. Nor'easterly. Sorry, nor'easterly is your bad fire wind. Yeah. 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 Ours is a nor'westerly. Yeah, ours is a nor'westerly. And bursts right out of the continent and comes across Bass Strait without a drop of moisture. It comes in high and it hits the bloody land and, and you know, varnish melts. It's sort of really hot. And you know you're for it, you know. If a tractor hiccups in a farmer's paddock or... Yeah. You'll get all this data. It's all available, you know. And the last catastrophic fire will have been well documented. You can look up the weather on the day. But you kind of know when it's bad. It just is bad, you know. There's a stinking hot dry wind barreling in from somewhere and you can smell the eucalypts, you know, they're just boiling off. And if you touch a match to that valley, the valley goes boom like that.
So there's not much you can do about
nothing. And nothing, fire breaks are crazy, right? Yeah. Yes, you can. They're gonna do a lot for you. Trees are very important in this. We're getting there. I'm discussing fire very fully because you are right. Now, the best thing you can ever have and build for yourselves is a hole in the ground. And I dug around the other night. You put two pipes up at angles and you put dirt over them thickly. And you just go into those and into the second pipe at an angle to the first. You've got no radiation, no fire, no worries. You sit there sipping Chianti, hang up a wet blanket inside the pipe. And enjoy yourself, you know. There's no worries, and pop out occasionally and see how things are going. So build a cellar, and don't build it under the bloody house. And build it away from the house on the south side, just a bit away, and dogleg it, and you're really out of business. And every house I design in a bad fire area, you can't do anything else with. I give them a cellar, and I tell them why I'm doing it, you know. You dig it into the bank, and you earth it over, and you dogleg it. And you make a little comfortable cellar at the end, you know, with three or four of you can sit and have a sauna. Because you've got plenty of heat.
Can you build your house to be fire-resistant enough to act as a shelter?
Yes, if you're going to build a fire-resistant house, build it out of timber, never out of brick or stone. Stone has an almost nil survival rate because of an instant transmission of heat, and brick's the second worst. But build it out of timber and paint it white, and you're in the best situation you ever heard about. If you don't believe me, look at the CSIRO reports on the survival of houses in Tasmanian fires. They're really the real fire test. And the white painted timber houses, they're the ones to live in. They are beauties. You can play bow torches on and take the paint off, can't you? But as soon as you heat up a brick house, there's almost instant transmission of heat indoors, and your varnish boils, you know. And then a bit of it leaks out through a window and boom, out.
An insulated brick house.
A bloody good insulated brick house. They've got a low survival rate. They've got bad drafting systems, you know.
You could attend to that, but
yeah, I'll attend to it. Because white painted wood is, you asked me if you want to build a house to survive fire, I said, yeah, build it out of timber and paint it white. And that's what I mean. So, I knew that anyhow before the fire, so I had a white painted timber house. I'm one of these blokes who take a few steps before things happen, and they really don't worry me. I thought that fire was a sort of orgasmic experience, you know. It was horrifying and terrifying, but even while I was in it, I thought, God, what a bloody thing to have been in, or to be in, if I get out of it, you know. And I was taking notes and running around and saving people and thinking, oh, Jesus, how fantastic, you know. and fallen over and half died. And one time I got blown across the ground, you know, this bloody wind hit, this fire wind, and I just went rolling uphill. I think, jeez, I never knew this would happen, you know. It's all great, you know. Good first hand experience. Really good. And your beard burns off, you know, buggers. And you got these little white curls and you look ancient. And you brush them and they come off in the shower and you smell like roast pork. And there's your little house. It's doing okay because it's made out of white paint. And maybe we've got the chance of a tank up here somewhere. Maybe we've got a sprinkler. Maybe we haven't, you know. But we just do our best for the situation. I didn't have a one-seat sprinkler on my roof. And I survived. I went round and just simply put ordinary sprinklers around the house, just quite ordinary low whizzle round sprinklers. And it was okay, it was quite good. And I filled up my gutters and I filled up my bath, my sink and inside and outside things. Had plenty of time, got an hour and a half, you know, before the fire's going to hit you from when you see that smoke. And I was ready for it. We had blankets ready and the washing off the line. And the doormat, the welcome mat dragged well back on top. The catch of the light. Shut all the windows. Shut everything up tight. And if necessary, just live outside. Don't bother to go back in. Just shut the whole lot up tight. Occasionally duck back in and make sure a spark hasn't come through a window and land on a bed. It always does that. And your mattress starts smelling. So put it out with the basin you had in the room. So we got there. Well, now, how are we going to defend against that? Well, any bank you can throw up to the north, if you could dig a little north dam and throw up a nice earth bank. Now, your radiation hits like this. There's an object in the way of fire radiation. There's your front. It's fairly high, especially in bushland. And your radiation hits like that. And if you look at the trees after fire, you'll find that they're burnt off in a dead straight line. If you stand, look down your roof line or from the ridge, you'll look down the radiation line. It's a gentle taper at about, I don't know, 15 degrees down. So if you want to have really tough and protect the house, you've got to have a fairly high object in front at a distance, and the radiation won't hit the house. Now, if that is a fireproof or a sullen tree, that's it. And you don't have any radiation on the house anyhow. And I stacked the whole front of my situation out about 50 feet away with willows, mulberries, silver and black wattle, and coprosma thickly on the ground, and I didn't have a worry in the bloody world. The fire didn't get through that. They just all boil, you know, the whole thing turns into boiling steam, and a black steam cloud drifts over you, no fire comes. So those trees are terribly important.
They don't catch a light, Bill?
No. You try and burn a coprosma.
Yeah, I haven't even seen
the flash. It's a mirror, that little green sappy mirror plant with the round leaves that flashes light, you know, and it's got thick little leaves. Everything eats it, and we do what we can.
Is it only silver and black wattle, or other types of wattles as well?
No, some wattles are really bad. Yeah. Blackwoods are good. Blackwoods and silver and black wattle, those two feathery leaf ones. Acacia saligna, that willow wattle, is bad. You'll see the litter under it like that, and it's dry leafed, right? Anything with moisture in the leaf.
Apple and pear trees.
Apple and pear trees are good, you know. Poplars are excellent, you know, and they're fast. So you all okay. Yeah. And these crops, these superb crops, sunflowers. He's dead green when the fire comes. He's dry at the end of the summer, but when fire comes, he's there. Fire comes February, March. It doesn't come March, April. And that's the other thing. Finding which months the fire comes in, and you can actually plant and stop it. And if you're in high-risk situations, throw up a sunflower bill. Sunflowers will stop a ground fire dead in 5 feet. They won't get 5 feet into it. Comfrey. Sunflower, your chook pens, if you like, out front. All your ground can be totally raked.
How wide would you have to have your break of sunflower seeds?
Oh, yeah, for here, say? put about 10 feet of it, give it double strength.
Bushfire?
Give it 15 feet. Come on, be reckless, give it 20 feet. Go on.
What about Jerusalem artichoke instead of sunflower?
Be perfectly okay. It's a sunflower. Any helianthus, right? Qualified. Yeah, any sunflower group. So if you can, these are the plants now. The thing you don't put out front is that thing. That's a tar barrel. That pine tree. You don't put that to the north. You don't put any mulch accumulators out front, like the casuarinas. You don't put anything like pampas, you know. You don't put your olives to the north because they are full of oils and go really nicely, you know. And they become the radiators. There are trees that do and trees that don't. And the trees that don't, and you put as much nice sappy mesembryanthum and ground cover like desmodium and lab bean and all this green stuff out there, but you can plant a whole forest. And just keep, the thing that governs that is, take your winter sun angle, which is at 30 degrees here, and keep the things below your winter sun angle. So you're in full sun, but you go out in ascending height. And by the time we get just to that gatepost, we can put a tree in 20 feet high, and that's enough for us on radiation, you see? We need that much space to defend. And of course, unfortunately, people sometimes buy a block of land, and I'll go there, you know, and I'll find their houses there. You know, and you can't defend them unless you go into their neighbours, you know? So, number one thing about a house site on a property, number one thing, give yourself room. And whatever you do, that's the place it's got to go anyhow. Don't hit any of those boundaries with it. Give yourself some room. Number one, you know, give yourself room to defend. You've got to have manoeuvrable room. You've got to defend against people like, you know, Sir Charles Court and the price of oil too. And, I mean, you can do that if you've got 10 feet, but you can't do it in 2 feet, you know. So, well, if you, the situation is that there you are and there's river. Is that it? Just there?
River and the north.
Yeah, there's the north. There you are and there's the river. Goes through the board. if you're living on the bank of a river that's to the north of you?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you're in a good position. You don't have to worry about those things. On the other side of the river, stick your willows to stop the radiation. We're talking about radiation here.
Yeah.
We're also talking about things that won't burn and therefore won't become radiators. These are non-radiating plants. Well, I'll list them all. They're in permaculture too. There's Opuntias, any of the cactuses, right? The mesembryanthemums, you know, those little fat little pig faces on the ground. Any of the cactuses, and they go up to 9 metres, so that's 27 foot high cactuses. So you can come up on those. You can put comfrey, sunflower, you know, your stone fruits, mulberries, willows, poplar. If you have a fire barrier planting, and you have some water, and you have an underground shelter, fire is not a worry, but that's got to be there. Look, an underground shelter today is sort of 30 minutes with a backhoe, or a day and a half with a pick and shovel. And good things are those, you know, those half culvert pipes, those galvo ones. Just dig in a hillside, half culvert, and put all your earth over that. You need a foot or so of it, and go for a little wander into the hill. It's quite good fun, anyhow. I had a retired miner come to stay with me. We got quite excited about it and went on several feet more than we intended, and did bloody wine cellars and God knows what. I said, "Let's get out of here. We'll be down here for life." He said, "I like it down here, you know." and when you're doing that, you know, if you're digging into this hill and you do your little doorway and your dog leading you in the game hill, incidentally, you're getting a pretty bare thing out front too with your spoil, some of your spoil you don't want. And leave it there, don't plant it, or plant it with pig folk. And it's a nice place anyhow, you know, in there. Nice and cool in the hot weather. And keep drinkies in there, bottles of wine, the apples, all that goodies, you know, so you can sneak off in there and you can't hear anyone if they call you either, if you do it properly. And you can have a pair of earplugs in there. Not hear anybody at all. I won't go any further with that. There's, the essential thing is not to have a lot of venting under things with dry things under here, and to watch it that the fire can't just actually run under your house. It's quite difficult to do that, and you do that with sheets of what's known to the north or northeast, sheets of tin or asbestos or hardy flex or something. Yes, I wouldn't use that asbestos stuff. Well, you can run fly wire over, it's perfectly okay, because it doesn't let substantial sparks in. And you're in business, you know, stop all your vents and tighten the joint up. I don't think there's anything more that's significant, but my word, those trees are significant. You know, if you don't plant your place well with trees, your fire risk is enormously greater, you know. And you'd be very grateful to those willows. You can watch them sizzling and behind them everything's okay. So if you've got a big fire front and you've got a really good system going here, just throw this fire planting around it as trees, because you can't be fussed about going planting sunflowers all around the joint. And you'd be really grateful for the fact you've got geese running around under it, because you've got a ground fire that high, you know. So use your poultry to keep things down there. If you're a vegetarian, you know, use all female geese. You don't have to breed geese. All male geese. Doesn't matter.
Bill, how foul of fire?
That's valid. I think it's very valid to be vegetarian. I think it's very valid in that case to use animals, but not to breed them so you don't have to kill them, you know.
How foul of fire run to the treetops without supporting ground litter to, you know, keep the heat up?
When it's catastrophic, what they call crown fire, which there's an old crown fire over there in that place, it just bloody goes, and it goes not like a run, it goes like a blossom, you know.
Yeah, but how far will that go? I mean, you won't go five miles.
But each time it goes, it'll go sort of 500 yards, you know.
Yeah.
Whoosh,
yeah.
And the ground's not a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. The fire was up at the top of the hill, you know, where the Lewin Road comes
uh-huh.
in, and it travelled on the top of the trees until it got the pollock.
And the ground wasn't still alight. See, what's going on? On a stinking hot day, those eucalypts are just puffing out essential oils, terpene. You can smell it.
Yeah.
And when the fire hits, it's just running through the gas at the top of the trees, you know. And it's going, you know... that sort of noise is happening. And then the ground fires will pick up and they'll come crackling along. But then the firestorm hits, and that's the thing you've got to watch, that centre.
Yeah.
And it comes along at a horrifying, you know, it's full of sheets of bloody iron and bits of everything, you know. And it's going like the bats out of hell, and it's going... And at that point, that's when your branches start to explode and... Your tree boils, the bark boils, and there's this terrible noise, you know. Multiple warfare, crack, crack, boom, crash, you know.
In this practical situation, like here, there's fire prevention, what would we want? The whole of this paddock? All the fire retardant?
No, you're going a bit far.
Yeah, but
you've got a nice little easy place there to dam up a bit of water, nice grade of water, and that'll keep all your willows and that around there okay. Throw a fire shadow here and then come a bit closer and throw it here again.
Yeah.
You know? It depends on how much you want to protect. If your annual garden and really good orchard lies over this like there, then throw it around. You know? and use your orchard as part of it, of course, and always graze under your orchard with goose or something, and it's all, your orchard becomes part of it. Oh, you can set up butte situations. I mean, if you can, really figure around, play around, do things like we do with that lake, you know, and run up a road onto a peninsula, mm-hmm. Well, the whole thing is laughable. When you've got willows around the lake, you know, it's not a proposition to worry about. But I'd give it a lot of planning and a lot of thought, and you keep your ground raked out for about 50 yards or 100 feet at least. That's about the minimum. It's quite possible to stick things like Caprosma right up close against your house walls. You know? Stick them here. If you haven't got room, put them here. Okay, so there's your fire defences. Well, we digressed, and we digressed a long time, and it was worth it, because I think that digression is critical. And I think it's very important to all of us that we take notice of all those very common features. Now, there's real good things here, like this road around here, to the north, round the house, right round the house. It's a fire break, you know. Caprosma on the other side of it, willows on the other side of that, beauty, all good, you know. And a nice hill at the back where we can get an earth tank and we can sit here and have a smoke when the fire's coming, you know. It's a bit ridiculous, I know. It's not hard to light your ciggies in a fire, are you? I found myself sitting down smoking, I thought, what am I doing?
How do grapevines go in
fire? Okay. If you read Virgil in the Georgics, you'll find it's all cleared up there for you. C. Day Lewis translation, he says, by all means grow your grape on the elm, because when fire takes it, it does not burn. But do not grow it on the olive, because the vine is destroyed with the tree. So, trellis on fig, mulberry and elm, and your grape and those trees survive. And trellis on olive, and you lose your grape, and trellis on a pine tree, and it doesn't grow. Do not trellis your grape on a stone pine, because it won't. Yeah, the old fellas had to go through the same thing. I mean, Greece in those days was foresters before the goats got it after the fires, you know. And they, if you read the Bull from the Sea and those other historical novels on Greece and Alexander, well, they're all galloping around through forests as they were all over Europe. You know, it didn't look like it looks now. Greece wasn't that bare, arid landscape. We will look exactly like Greece in another decade, two decades. You know, nice, dark, bare bones, wandering old shepherds leading on flocks with 5,000 goats, a few gnarled olives, you know. If we go on the way we're going, that's the way we look. Because they were running around in butte forests, you know, really big forests. And a lot of their legends are associated with trees and forest spirits and big groves and so on. They ain't there now. And look what the Greeks have become. They were those noble heroes, you know, with great ideals and that. Now they're in fish shops, you see.
We're
living in Melbourne, in Carlton. And that's what's going to happen to you all if you go on burning your country off, you know. And you've got to leave your country because it just won't support you. The shepherd and his goats are the last, the ecological end game. That's the end of it all, then. Well, I think we dealt with fire. I'll try and get back to the basics of design.